Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Many have called the recent presidential cycle a change election. This is probably true, but will this include American foreign policy? Donald Trump has a mandate to pursue change. He will have the power to change course. Will he opt for continuity instead? Crosstalking Trump, I'm joined by my guest, Chris Hedges in Princeton. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. And in Rome, we cross to Alistair Crook. He is a former British diplomat. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Chris, let me start out with you. The title of this program is Change or Continuity. Now, I think it's largely agreed that Trump has a mandate. I think, like the rest of us, we were very surprised by the margins. But will this mandate be extended into foreign policy? Now, we have a lot of ideas about what Trump thinks about things, nothing really solid. I guess that applies to the first administration, too. But recent appointments, potential positions in his administration indicate a lot more continuity to me than change. What are your thoughts? Go ahead, Chris.
It depends on the region of the world. Okay. I think vis-a-vis Ukraine, you will see a reticence on the part of the Trump administration to continue funneling weapons to the Ukrainian government and perhaps seek some kind of solution to the war, which, of course, could have been done before the war, which is an exchange of land for peace. In terms of the Middle East, it will be complete continuity and perhaps even more aggressiveness. Remember, Trump moved the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He recognized Israel's sovereignty over the occupied Golan Heights. There is a heavy push within the Netanyahu government to annex the West Bank. Certainly nothing will change in Gaza. Makes no difference if you're Palestinian Gaza, whether it's Biden or Trump or Harris or anyone else. But I think we could see a more aggressive posture in the West Bank. Israel, of course, is applying its genocidal tactics with increasing frequency in the West Bank. It has carried out the largest land seizure since October 7th that we've seen in the West Bank since the occupation. So that would be the difference. I will say this on Trump's behalf. I'm not a Trump supporter, but he doesn't seem to like war. And the Democratic Party is clearly the war party in this country.
Yes, I agree with you. I don't know how he's going to square the circle on that one here. Essentially the same question to you, Alistair, and just the added question at the end. When will Trump get tired of the slogan Genocide Dawn?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I agree with your cautious first comments. Actually, we don't know who's going to be in the team. There's a lot of disruptive propaganda going on where many of the neocons are lobbying and trying to get themselves either into the transition or into the cabinet. And we've seen that with completely bogus attempts to say there was a telephone call between Trump and President Putin just recently. And it was just all fake, completely untrue, even though it was in the Washington Post with those who were privy to the call said this and that. It was just untrue. So I think we have to be a little cautious. But broadly, I agree with what Chris Hedges just said, in that I think when it comes to Ukraine, it's going to be different from other parts of foreign policy. One reason is because really Russia is in the driving seat on Ukraine. I mean, the war is largely won. It's accelerating now in that direction. And I think that really there isn't very much that Washington can put into the pot if it didn't like if Putin said, for example, no, I'm sorry, I'm not wanting a ceasefire. I'm wanting a permanent solution, and I'm going to go for a permanent solution. So what is Washington going to do? I mean, it's largely expended all of its possibilities on that. So I think that is easier, if you like. I think the most difficult one will be actually with Israel, because Israel I mean, first of all, a president doesn't have as much room for maneuver, any president of the U.S., because, as you know, Congress is bought lock, stock and barrel by the lobby. And therefore, he doesn't have that much room for maneuver. I think he wants to be a friend of Israel. But the consequences of that may be very great. My guess is he probably doesn't want trouble in the Middle East.
Well, I mean, but Alistair, does he want to have Biden's legacy when it comes to Israel-Palestine? Everybody can have their own thoughts about Donald Trump. I have my own. But he wants to be loved and liked, okay? Being called Genocide Don is not going to go down very well. Let me go back to Chris in Princeton. Chris, I mean, we have, 69 days left of the Biden administration. What's to stop them from escalating when it comes to Ukraine? I mean, it's their war. And soon, it will be Donald Trump's war. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, first of all, America is an extremely polarized country, and half of the country is not neutral about Donald Trump. They are less than half, certainly of the electorate. But he's used to being tarred and feathered rhetorically, not just by his opponents, but by mainstream media, CNN, The New York Times, where I used to work, etc. So being labeled Genocide Don rolls off of him when it comes from that other side of the divide. I think the most dangerous potential conflagration won't come out of Ukraine, won't come out of what more can they do? I mean, they've given Ukraine just about everything you can give them. But I think that the danger, it will be a push by Netanyahu to incite a war with Iran,
right,
and using this interim period, because Biden will be walking away, the Biden administration, that I think there is potential there. Certainly the Netanyahu government wants a conflict with Iran. The United States does not want a conflict in Iran or with Iran. But if there is a massive attack, we don't know how Tehran is going to respond. Especially with significant civilian casualties. And as Alistair correctly points out, the U.S. Congress has been bought and paid for by the Israel lobby. Then I think that's a bigger danger than anything happening in Ukraine.
Well, I mean, the reason I go to Alistair now in Rome, I mean, the reason why I bring up escalation is that escalation in both these crisis areas, Ukraine and Israel-Palestine, what the Biden administration in its waning days may want to do is create political facts on the ground, essentially delivering their foreign policy to Donald Trump and his team with even fewer options. Alistair.
Well, yes, it can be escalation in Ukraine, but I think that'll be managed by Moscow quite adequately. The Middle East is different. It's much more dangerous, and it can easily set off something much wider. Just to be clear, the Israeli government expects and is asking for Trump to accept the annexation of the West Bank and Gaza. And they've sent an ambassador to the United States, who is a settler, a zealous, and who's been living in Hebron during time. It's quite clear. And people like Smotrich think it's a done deal. But the main thing is that I think that what you could easily see from Israel would be them to declare victory in Lebanon and in Gaza and then say to Trump, now we need you to come and support us in an attack on Iran. And that's why I think you're going to see in this period ahead that Iran is going to attack Israel first. And Iran is going to do that because the most important thing now, because it's really following the same pattern we saw with Ukraine, where the West says, oh, Russia, it's on its knees. Its troops are not trained. They don't even have food. They've got no ammunition. Their command is terrible. And they say now the same about Iran. Iran, we destroyed all its air defenses. We damaged its ability to make missiles. It's really now naked before us. We can go in where we like. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, their attempt to take out the air defenses was a complete failure. They have not damaged any of the what they call the mixers. Those mixers were moved during Hatami's period as president into the big mountains. They're immune from that. So it's all being set up for the idea that America can be pulled in to this war. And I think this is going to be dangerous, and which is why Iran needs to establish, just as Russia did to the United States, that it is military capable. It has real deterrence. It has the ability to hurt Israel very seriously and badly if you want to go down that route. They've tried to show it twice, and still the narrative turns around and goes the other way. Oh, no, Iran is just lying naked before us. Now's the time we can destroy their nuclear capacity. That's nonsense. They won't have that, and it might turn out to be a very ugly engagement indeed. But I think there is a prospect that we may get pulled into that, because, yes, I think there is support in the United States and support even amongst those that he seems to be nominating to his team for a war with Iran. It seems that there is a faction in Washington that wants a war. Well, to redeem itself.
Chris, I want to ask you the same thing, but in the second part of the program. But as always, it looks like personnel is policy. Can you quickly comment on that before we go to the break?
Yeah, Alistair is right. He is bringing in these rabid neocons who have long lusted for a conflict with Iran. And I would second Alistair's warning that this potential interim period is extremely dangerous, because essentially by the time, if a war began with Iran, Trump would inherit it. There's not much he can
do. That would be the very point. That's the stratagem here. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's foreign policy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the potential Trump foreign policy. Okay, let's go back to Chris and Princeton. I'd like you to follow up on what Alistair had to say about the potential of a regional flaring up of the conflict in West Asia, the greater Middle East, however you want to describe it. But it seems to me that this is a way, as Alistair described, is a way to trip the new Trump administration into having a continuity of policy, not allowing him to have very many choices here. And I'd also comment is that the stratagem initiating a conflict with Iran also is an indirect a conflict with Russia, and that is something the Biden administration will certainly want to continue to test. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes. Alistair reiterated the kind of arguments that are used to go after Iran. We heard those arguments to justify the invasion and occupation of Iraq, which did not go particularly well for the United States. Indeed, it was catastrophic, like Afghanistan and Syria and Libya and everything else. The fact is the air defenses of Iran, some of which are Russian, some of which are Chinese, are quite good. The Iranian Air Force is quite decrepit. Many of its warplanes date back to the Shah, but the air defenses are good. And the Israelis want the United States to take out the air defenses because they don't want to take the losses. It would obviously start out as an aerial campaign. Where it would go from there, I don't know. If it doesn't go well, there would be pressure to put troops on the ground. Logistically, how would that happen? Again, I can't see it coming in through Iraq. Maybe they could plow their way through Syria. Those would not be Israeli troops, by the way. I mean, there's just so many potentials. I mean, you know, the ability to sneak an aircraft carrier is very possible. That's 5,000 U.S. lives. I covered war for 20 years, and once you open that Pandora's box, it controls you. You don't control it. So, yes, this is a very dangerous moment. I don't think it would go well for the United States at all. It would be another war of attrition. We have to look also at Lebanon. Things are not going well for the Israelis in Lebanon. Reports of over 4,000 casualties out of Lebanon alone. And they have not moved. They've been stymied. Of course, their response is what their response always is, which is saturation bombing. And just to go back to something Alistair mentioned, which I left out, that's important, is that yes, they want to annex the West Bank, but they also want to annex Gaza. They largely are achieving that in northern Gaza. They want to create a humanitarian crisis that is of such catastrophic proportions in southern Gaza, they believe, the Israelis, that will put pressure on the international community to essentially depopulate or ethnically cleanse southern Gaza. That's the plan. I don't know whether it's going to work. I've just been in Egypt. My understanding is the Egyptian military has made it very clear to President Sisi that there will be no Palestinians in the Sinai, as Israel would like, and as our Secretary of State Antony Blinken proposed to the Sisi government. The Jordanians have moved their troops up to the borders of the West Bank because, again, in anticipation of a massive ethnic cleansing campaign to push Palestinians into Jordan. It's a very, very volatile moment, and I'm not as worried about the Ukraine because, honestly, I don't see what else the United States can do. You have attacks within Russia itself, but I think the volatile area right now is the Middle East.
Oh, I agree with you completely, but you know my thesis has always been is NATO willing to give up? It's not necessarily a U.S. president or whoever is in power in Kyiv. So I think that still remains to be a wild card. But I obviously agree with what's going on in the Middle East is much more volatile. Alistair, you know, considering our conversation here, you know, we're looking at an administration going out and a new one coming in. But considering what we've already said here, does it really matter who the president of the United States is?
Well, yes, I think because I do think if there would be a possibility. First of all, when Israel launched its attack, with a great fanfare, you know, they won't know what's hit them. It'll come as a huge surprise. They'll be shocked. And in fact, their aircraft never got closer than 70 kilometers to Iranian airspace. And then we saw and we heard on the Hebrew channels, they said, you know, something's going on. We've found that we're facing air defenses that are unknown and unexpected. And yes, they were probably the S-400, which was actually locking on even to their stealth F-35s at 70 kilometers away from the airspace. So they collapsed it and they came home. The second wave, which was supposed to follow the destruction of the air defenses, would come in and bomb things heavily. It was canceled and pulled back. So I just want to say that. But I think, you know, it's the same thing with Russia. Iran has been under siege, been attacked, has been sanctioned, been threatened with bombings since really the, you know, embassy siege years ago. And, you know, it's only going to come to some form of settlement when we understand that Iran has military capabilities that are serious and capable of establishing a parity within the region, and that we talk to them as, if you like, someone on a par and someone who deserves respect. And then it is possible that you might have a...
Alistair, how do we get there? I mean, you've already said, both of you have already said, well, you know, Capitol Hill is Israeli-occupied territory. I mean, I agree. You're absolutely right. That's the way to go. But how do we get there?
Well, I think you're going to see, because I think what's going to come fairly shortly is a third, much more demonstrative attack on Israel by Iran, which will really, I mean, I think, you know, anyone after this will not really be easily. They know that they have to actually confirm and get the West to accept that they have real deterrence. It's not the aircraft. I agree with Chris, they're years old. But I mean, they have missiles, they have EW, the latest Russian EW. They have S-400s that seem to be able to lock on even to stealth aircraft. You know, I'm not sure that America would really want to go into that sort of secured airspace, even itself.
The question is, too, is can you humble the Zionist project in the region? That's another question here. I don't think anyone has an answer for that. Chris, it's already been mentioned on this program. It's really a very strange story about the Trump-Putin telephone call, which apparently never happened. But the way it was reported is very detailed what they talked about, you know, demilitarization and, of the conflict, freezing of the conflict, an 800-mile contact line, European troops. This is an amazing amount of detail for a conversation that didn't happen. What is the design here, Chris?
Well, it was a leak by someone to discredit Trump. It's an old story with the whole Trump as Russian asset, which for 2 years the media slogged, completely untrue, of course, disproven by the FBI and the Mueller report. But that we're going to see a lot of that. So it's part of the disinformation campaign. They're just going back to the old playbook.
Okay, well, Alistair, same thing. I mean, you're a retired diplomat here. I mean, so we have to assume that the people in power right now are out of the gate, and they're doing everything they can to sabotage the next president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Well, of course. I mean, as Chris said, the United States is deeply polarized, and one half of the population would love to sabotage Trump's initiative. But I do think, and I go back to this, you know, I know what Israel is going to ask of him, but is Trump going to do it?
Yeah.
I don't know that he is going to. He may actually not do what Netanyahu wants and thinks he's going to do, because actually my reading of this is he has a huge agenda that's a domestic agenda, changing the economy completely away from a very lax fiscal economy to one which is based on tariffs and lower taxes. I mean, it's a huge project to try and reinstate all this, undo all the laws that have gone on about gender, about censorship. You know, that's why I'm not sure that he really wants to be completely sort of brought into the mess that Netanyahu is setting up for himself at this stage, because he needs a bit of time to get all this going and get it started, and not to spend his time worrying about what's happening in Gaza and Lebanon. But I mean, you know, he will support Israel, of course.
Well, he'll have 18 months, if he's lucky, to get his agenda across the board. That remains to be seen. Chris, 1 year from now, what do you think we'll be saying about the Trump administration's foreign policy?
Well, it's very impulsive, driven by Trump's very mercurial nature. I just want to throw in, to add to something that Alistair said. It is true that they probably don't want a war with Iran, but neither does the Biden administration, and neither does the Pentagon. There's long been reticence, especially within the Pentagon, to a conflict with Iran, but facts on the ground. If Tehran carries out a significant attack and there are significant civilian casualties, we could get dragged in. But I think that reticence is not only within the Trump administration, it's within the entire American foreign policy and military establishment. What will we be saying? Well, the difference between a second Trump administration and a first Trump administration is that this time the neocons, or whatever you want to call them, the Christian right, they're ready in a way that they weren't before. There's a preparation for power. Of course, the heritage 2025.
I don't know, Chris, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, ready.
I think it's a bad thing.
I agree.
I don't think it'll be quite as chaotic. as the first administration, and therefore probably more effective in terms of implementing their agenda.
Let's just hope. Gentlemen, thank you for a fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Princeton and in Rome. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.